shirt. I got the beat in the box. And there's no auto-tune in grunge music, you guys, so you gotta bear with me. Deal? Let's do it. She scratches a letter into a wall made of stone. Maybe someday another child won't feel as alone as she does. It's been 2 years and counting since they put on.
Everybody, and welcome to episode number 8 of Nitro Beard. This is an extravagant holiday special that we have before us. I think Easter is tomorrow, yes? It's a Sunday?
I believe so, okay. Yes.
Okay, good deal. So yeah, we're doing a nice holiday extravaganza, and the way we're going to do that is we are actually going to respond to some reader mail and some questions, which is a lot of fun. But before we get started with that, we have to do the formal introductions because we actually have a special guest with us today. I am your host, Mr. Wes Gardner. And we have, of course, Mr. Brian Belita, professional, the parkour champ, as I like to refer to you.
I am here in full glory.
Oh, you need to put the shirt back on. We also have a special guest with us today from the platformers community and celebrity of the internet, if I do say so myself, of some Team Fortress 2 shenanigans and all-around classy gentleman, Mr. Petrie. How are you doing, sir?
Everybody in the house get drunk.
Oh, man. I like where this is going.
This is already shaping up, my friend. This is going well. But yes, welcome to the show.
Petrie and I are one of a team of four of totally pro. I mean, we're straight up cow Left 4 Dead players, man. You can't handle us.
Absolutely.
Oh shit! Wait a minute. Before we get started, Petrie, were you in there with whenever the whole Narpig thing went down?
Oh, I was integral to the NARPing experience.
Okay, we're talking about that first. Yeah. Before we get to the reader questions, I wanted to do that first, but we didn't get to this.
That's right, we didn't.
Last episode, we were going to, and then we had the whole corruption deal and all that nastiness.
That's
But okay, we have to go into the legend of NARPing right now, because this is probably the most hilarious thing I have ever seen. I'm going to put it in the show notes so everyone can see exactly what we're talking about. But, I'll let you guys, you guys were in the thick of it. So I want you guys to kind of do the play by play on what actually happened. And here is the legend of NARPing.
Man, where do we be? I'm going to let Epi take this over since he's a guest. So I'll let him have the honor of, unfolding the story of NARPing.
Well, as I recall, I'm basically, you know, doing our typical pub stomp thing. It was me, you, I believe, Exit, and, was Kevar involved in that?
Yeah, I believe it was Kevar.
Yeah. So it was the central four, you know, our standard team, and, you know, we sign on, you know, get some pubs in there, and, we joined an all talk server. And, the other guys on the team, you know, were actually really surprisingly cool, you know, we were just hanging out, and I think, it was on No Mercy 2, NARPing joins. And just is like, it was like Elmer Fudd on crack while sucking helium is the best description for his voice I could possibly give.
That's basically it.
Oh, that's so good.
And to boot on top of that, of him just having a hilarious voice, just his mannerisms and the things he were saying were just great. And I wish I had started recording earlier, but I started actually recording a demo, and I think No Mercy 3. And it just unfolded that it was probably the best Left 4 Dead game we had ever played, and nothing could top it.
It was right before the teabag of me. Bag of me.
Because earlier in the game, when we first started playing with NARPing, I think he as a hunter took me out or pounced me, and he was like, I'm teabagging this guy. And later on, for those of you that played Left 4 Dead, you'll know what I'm talking about. When you're going up the hospital, and there's kind of a choke point where you have to activate an elevator and wait for it. And just then, I became the tank and just steamrolled him. I ran, knocked a couple out of the way, and chased NARPing into a stairwell. And I slammed NARPing, and he ended up just hanging from the banister of one of the stairwells. And so I turned around, backed the tank's ass directly over NARPing's head and started crouching. And NARPing just starts going, "Oh, this guy's teabagging me!
He's got my butt on my face. He's rubbing my butt on my face."
It was so, his cadence on that, like, at first I was like, okay, what is this? Because I just started watching it just like a general Left 4 Dead replay. And then I was like browsing another thing, and then I started hearing that, and it's like, "He's rubbing the butt on my face!" Or like, whatever he was saying. And I turned it back, and I was like, what the hell is going on? And that's it. From that point on, the rest is golden. It is the funniest. Okay, keep going.
Yeah, it's... I won't spoil it all. I'll just give one of the other tidbits is that, Kevar kept baiting NARPing to say, "Where's that wascally wabbit?" with the lore being that if he said it, that Kevar would jump off the roof, off the fourth level of No Mercy, which is a kind of open floor plan of a hospital, and you can just jump off the side. You'll have to watch it or watch the demos to find out what happens. And then later on the roof, NARPing is quoted as saying, "Oh yeah, I'm sexy. And then immediately being pounced by a hunter. And it was just,
he says something like, "All the chicks dig me" or something. And like, right at that moment. Exactly. Right at that moment where he calls himself a chick magnet, he gets bombarded. I mean, every character in the game just goes and tears him to shreds. And it's the funniest timing.
I think at that point on the roof, we were pretty much specifically just targeting NARPing. So.
And it was a perfect confluence too, because the rest of the guys on their team they were all in it with us. You know, they were all great guys. They were they were having just as much fun as we were.
Yeah, it was fantastic. So in the show notes, you'll find the link to the video on Google Video, as well as the actual demos to download if you want to check those out at kind of full resolution, because some people weren't talking. So in the demos, you can actually see the text. Definitely check it out though, because it was fantastic. If this doesn't get you to play Left 4 Dead, then, I don't know what will.
Yeah. Exactly. And it is very hilarious. I know a lot of people out there are like, why would I want to watch a replay instead of just play the game? But trust me, it is worth it. Cause I'm horrible at Left 4 Dead, but I'm not NARPig bad. Like, I'm not that bad at it. So it makes me feel like a champion. I mean, so it also gives you the self-esteem boost.
I mean, I'd say this is up there with like the chocolate milk kid playing, what was it, like Soldier of Fortune or something? I don't know.
Rainbow Six guy, and he was like, chocolate milk. Yeah.
Mom, you told me you bring me some chocolate milk.
I will say yes, like absolutely, this is on par with that. And he also puts a badass picture of himself on the profile of his like Steam account where he tries to look all thuggish and all like he has his nose up in the air like he's taking a mugshot. But he has to be what? Maybe 13? Maybe 13.
I think we put him at 11 or 12.
Oh, I love the internet.
That was actually one of the things that was so wonderful about NARPig is because he was such a little innocent dude. He wasn't, you know, screaming racial slurs at us or anything. Yeah, he was just, I don't know, probably a 9 or 10-year-old. I can't imagine he was beyond that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was genuine. And, I mean, that's what made it, like, so funny. And part of it is making fun of him. But it has that kind of, like, lost puppy appeal to where you're laughing with it. You know, where all the shit's hitting the fan and all the shenanigans are happening and you're kind of rooting for the underdog, but he just gets torn to pieces.
Yeah. It was great. Oh, so man. Yeah, definitely that check is, it out. You will not be disappointed.
That is the legend of NARPig. And with that, we're going to go right into the, listener mail. And I just, first, before we kind of get into it, I wanted to say that, you know, first off, thank you for all the listeners that gave us the questions that we're going to go over. And also, this is a little bit more successful than I thought it'd be. Cause, you know, every time you hear of kind of the homegrown podcast and stuff, hey, we're doing listener mail and hey, get your questions right on the air. You maybe get.
And it's actually just Wes writing these questions and making up names. But
exactly. It's like, here's from
Justin
Ponce de Leon. And he writes in with, what's your favorite color?
We have one here from, Magellan wants to know.
Right, you just started throwing out names at like on your desk in front of you. We've got a question here from Samsung.
Mr. Song writes in. But this actually turned out really well, and you guys have the list of the questions, and we're going to go over them really quick.
I'm excited.
I am too, actually. I mean, some of these are very, very good. Other ones, they're all good questions, but, you know, it's kind of the,
I don't think there's such a thing as a bad question on Nitrobeard.
That's a very good point. But okay, we're gonna, at first, I think we're gonna go into the actual gaming questions, the ones that correlate to why we have this podcast. So, awesome listener, Marco Strider actually has four questions for us, and we're going to go down the list first. His first question, what is everybody's thoughts on the Game Trailer Countdown's 10 best fighting games list? And I have a list right here. If, anyone listening is not familiar with it, I'll read down the list real quick, and then we'll kind of go over what we think about it. Number 10 is Killer Instinct. Number 9, Mortal Kombat. Number 8, Tekken. 7, King of Fighters. Number 6, Soul Calibur. Number 5, the Capcom's Versus series, you know, like Marvel vs. Capcom and X-Men vs. Street Fighter and all that good stuff. Number 4, Guilty Gear. Number 3, Samurai Showdown. Number 2, Virtua Fighter. And number 1, Street Fighter. That's a good list. But the reasons why aren't because of number 1 or number 2, because that's kind of the number 1 and number 2 always. It's like, okay, who's going to win between Street Fighter and Virtua Fighter? Because the Street Fighter fans scoff at the Virtua Fighter fans and vice versa. It's like, and the Virtua Fighter fans call the Street Fighter fans babies, and it just gets heated debate. But the thing that surprised me and the thing that I was actually really excited about was number 4 was Guilty Gear. I thought that would be like 9 or 10, maybe not even on the list, but I love Guilty Gear.
There are a lot of Guilty Gear fans.
I love it. I mean, the crazy ass metal and all this other stuff. I'm just a big fan because it has that weird kind of Devil May Cry 3 attitude to where everyone's pretty badass, but almost in the satirical Spinal Tap way. So yeah. I'm just down with it. But, you know, in number 3, Samurai Showdown. I don't know if they put I mean, it warrants being at number three, but I don't know if they put that one there because of the Xbox Live release and, you know, the virtual console.
Oh, was there? Was there an Xbox?
Yeah, it was a while back, but I think they released the Samurai Showdown Collection or something recently. So I don't know if they were just playing on hype or what.
Did they do any upgrades to it, like visual or anything, or basically just
I don't think they did. But
yeah, I think the new King of Fighters 12 is the first SNK game that's really getting an HD treatment.
Oh, yeah. Looks gorgeous.
I'm a little surprised to see Guilty Gear just because, now granted, I'm not an expert fighting game.
Yeah.
But from what I hear is basically that Guilty Gear is a ridiculously broken game, but it's so broken that it's almost kind of balanced. It's sort of like Marvel vs. Capcom 2 in that way.
Right.
That it's just incredibly broken, but if you work around that, I mean, it is an awesome game. I love, I don't know any of the character names, but the dude with the paper bag on his head.
Yeah. Yes. That, and then, my favorite guy is,
Dr. Magini.
Oh, God damn it. The Magini deal. Oh. Okay, for Peter, if you're kind of lost right now, Magini is the term for, I guess, the zombie-like people in Resident Evil 5. And last episode, Brian called everything Magini. Like, everything Magini.
Everything. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the list is good. It's almost, isn't there essentially just 10 fighting game franchises, period? You know,
well, that's
what I mean.
Why Killer Instinct is on there. I mean, Killer Instinct, no one would put Killer Instinct on there. You know, you may as well put Primal Rage on there. They're the same quality. I mean, everyone loved doing 1,000 hit
that's
combos
true.
That were unbreakable on the SNES, but it's not, you know, it's not best anything.
Yeah, that's true.
Now that you said Primal Rage, Petrie, I have to mention that yesterday when I was hanging out with some friends, somebody mentioned to me that there is a paperback novel based on Primal Rage. There is a Primal Rage paperback novel, and I'm on the Amazon page right now, and I'm going to read the product description real quick. As Negro-san and as the undead armies lay waste to Earth, with a U, I might add, the Avatars struggle to free their imprisoned dino god masters and must overcome personal differences in order to defeat their common enemy. Original.
Personal differences? Like, is it like political affiliations? Like, what are we talking about here?
Like the fact that one is a gorilla and one is a T-Rex or something? I don't know. All I remember from that game was that you could pee on people.
Yeah, well, I was about to say, unless there's an entire chapter dedicated to that, like, I don't want to read it.
Well, I can think of a
person who would love that book.
Who? I don't...
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Right, to touch on the act, yeah, so I was surprised that Killer Instinct was on there. I remember my brother had, like, the Game Boy... the original game, you know, the fucking dot matrix screen. But the one fighting game that I'm sad to not see in there is Bloody Roar.
That's a good point, actually, because
for me, that's I think by far my favorite fighting game. The one that I've actually kind of invested time into learning. And you know, I guess kind of getting it's surprisingly deep, and it was a really good game, and I think by and large it was kind of underrated and overlooked. But so I'm kind of sad that it's not up there. But of course, you know, opinions.
Yeah, well, I mean, Doug from No Quarter Radio, he's a huge Bloody Roar fan, and he's amazing at it. Oh yeah, oh yeah. He owns I can't remember which one came out for GameCube, but he was dominant at it. I remember whenever he was at college, like he would challenge people, and he would play one handed, and destroy.
I have to relay a story. I was playing with my friend Kenny. A while ago, and we were playing, and he was like, "All right, man, you need a handicap." And I was like, "All right, I'll play with my right hand." And I played with my right hand only, and I beat him. And he was like, "Damn it, all right, a little more of a handicap." So I played with my left hand, and I beat him. And I ended up playing with my feet and beating him. And it was pretty fantastic.
One thing that's nice about this list, as you mentioned before, is they've got Samurai Showdown and King of Fighters, because so often you'll see these lists, they just pretty much ignore Garou and Samurai Showdown, and just put King of Fighters on there as kind of like the overarching SNK franchise.
Yeah. Mark of Wolves is probably one of my favorite games ever made.
That's a fun game. Yeah.
It's so good, and it is ridiculously balanced. I mean, and just, I think yesterday I was playing Third Strike with Doug, and we were actually talking about Mark of the Wolves, and Yeah, I love that series, and I'm not even a big SNK fan, but for some reason, just that one game, like if anyone wanted to get into, any SNK fighting game, that's the one I would recommend definitely. Because with the King of Fighters, there's so many of them. I haven't gotten much into the series. I know that I guess 98 is the epitome. I know that like that one is the most played, but yeah, like there's so many of the, there's like King of Fighters, 74, King of Fighters, you know, all the way up to like yeah. ever since the Nixon era. And then
King of Fighters, yes, special guest character, Magnum P.I.
Right, Miami Vice. And
his chest hair comes alive to inflict special attacks.
His mustache.
To bring up a little bit of controversy, do you think Smash Brothers should be on this list?
No. Absolutely not.
No. I don't, you know what, to go on a tangent, I've got friends that are, you know, like huge, you know, Smash Brothers fans. There are a lot of people, you know, on the platformers that are huge Smash Brothers fans, and I've played it, and it just frustrates the shit out of me. I don't know, maybe it's just because I haven't really invested time into learning it or whatever, but I just could not wrap my head around how it works. Right. I don't know what it is. Just,
I've played a lot of Smash Brothers, and I just see it as a party game. I mean, I really do not see it as a fighting game. And I know it sounds ridiculous.
No, I would agree.
And it's, and a lot of people argue it's semantics, but it's not a fighting game. Like, you can do combos, you can do counters, you can use items, but that's kind of like calling Power Stone a fighting game. And it's not, you know.
I guess it would be more called like a, I don't know, I guess like a brawler. I don't know what category you put it in, because I think, the term fighting game generally implies, you know, just a one-on-one battle, like, you know.
True, yeah.
So.
Well, I think the problem with it is, too, is yes, you can make it a fighting game if you, you know, use a, you know, no items, Fox only, Final Destination.
right.
But, you know, there's other games you could do that with. I mean, we would play Daytona and turn it into a destruction derby by just crashed each other off the track. I mean, you can do that with lots
of
games. I mean, it's an excellent game, but I think the fighting game versus not a fighting game thing is basically just a giant internet argument where there's probably a chip on the shoulders of the Smash Brothers fans.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that they get bogged down in that. I mean, and you know, justifiably so, it's part of a lot of the Major League Gaming tournaments because there is a competitive aspect to it. But it's almost, I don't know, that, because there is a lot of strategy to it. I mean, I don't want to sound like, you know, I'm just, you know, breezing it off or whatever, but it's just, I don't know.
Well, it's no, you know, it's no, Capcom versus, you know, mutton bashing game.
So. Yeah, exactly. Where you do a 45 hit combo and then the back of the screen gives you an epileptic seizure. You know?
And then you wonder how you did it.
Well, I think, too, you can look at the design changes in Brawl, where they put in just arbitrary elements like tripping that are basically put in there specifically to make it impossible to have a perfectly balanced skill-v-skill match.
That's true.
You know, they're just random elements are in there that aren't in there in any other fighting game that I think is kind of, if you look at that, you can sort of tell that the designer's intent was that he wants that game, you know, skill is very important, but they want an element of just crazy randomness, you know, sort of like, you know, Mario Kart, except, you know, Mario Kart is so much worse with the blue shells.
Oh,
such.
Yeah.
Mario Kart is we will make this a close race no matter what.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But, yeah.
And in general, you know, general overview of the list, I mean, it's like Epi or like Petri mentioned, there's, you know, there's not a whole lot of big fighting franchises. So, you know, it's a list of them.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, good list. It's solid. I mean, it's kind of predictable. There were a few of the things like the Guilty Gear and things like that were surprising, but I mean, overall, a solid list, but you can't really go wrong.
Just,
you know, with it.
Just walk out Killer Instinct with Blood Roar.
Man, Tekken, I don't know.
Do you remember when Tekken 3 Tag Tournament? I mean, that was huge.
Oh, yeah.
Not Tekken 2.
No, it was Tekken 3.
I
mean, that was huge, and then ever since then, it has just fallen off a cliff.
That's true. I mean,
my brother recently picked up the PSM one. I guess it's like Dark Resurrection or something, And we've got a share account, so I grabbed it from him. So I'll have to
it's good.
Because I've been kind of itching for a fighting game.
I have the PSP version of it. But I want to get the PlayStation Network because of the online play. But I'm a big Tekken fan, like me and Hwarang, you know, go way back. And you know, Yoshimitsu and that, like the whole gang, it's one of those that it's almost camp value now though. It's like, hey, Hachi's back from the dead again. And you're like, oh shit. Hachi. You know,
he's still fighting with Kazuma.
Well, yeah, exactly. And it's like the devil Kazuya. Blah, 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 blah. And, you know, it just gets ridiculous.
Yes, there's a bear.
Kuma's awesome though. Come on now. All right. Okay. Next question. This one's specifically for Brian. Have you? This is also from Marco Strider user. For Brian, have you seen the short films called Captain Dynamic made by Rooster Teeth?
Yeah. If I remember correctly, they're kind of. I don't know if they ventured into it before, but they ventured into kind of actual real life filming instead of machinima.
Yeah, machinima. Yes.
Yes, Machinima. And this is, I guess, a kind of spoof on City of Heroes.
Stuff. Oh, nice.
I think I saw the first episode, and at least for me, it seemed kind of lackluster. So I don't know, maybe it gets better later. It seemed like, a neat idea, but it just seemed kind of like mad TV humor.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if you guys are on the same boat as me. Yeah.
Kind of the...
That is a harsh judgment.
So I don't know. Maybe it gets better later. He'll have to like write in and let me know if it does get better past the first episode. But from what I saw and remember, it was kind of like.
Now is Rooster Teeth? Is that the same production company that does like Red versus Blue? Or am I thinking of something else?
No. They
that's
do
the
Red
same
versus
one.
Blue.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the same people or if there's kind of a larger parent company. I guess that puts these together as well because. It certainly didn't seem like the guys that did Red versus Blue were involved.
Okay.
Because it would have probably been a little bit funnier.
No.
Well, have you seen the, apparently, I mean, they ended Red versus Blue, right. Like the original Red versus Blue, I think like a year or two ago. And apparently they started up a new series that's Red versus Blue, but it's supposedly more serious. Have you guys watched that?
No. That sounds kind of interesting though, because I mean, oddly enough,
Yeah, we were just earlier talking today about you were sending me some links to some pretty neat Halo 3, videos user made.
Yeah, and like Digital Fear. Like a lot of the Machinima fans out there will think of Digital Fear, and he does a deal called like RB and the Chief, and he does a few other things which are pretty funny. But he also has some really well done dramatic stuff. Yeah, like what I was showing Brian earlier. And I mean that I'm trying to look for a good engine to make game films. Cause I mean, that's always been a passion of mine, went to film school and all that stuff, but I'm currently looking for the best tools to use for what I have now because my PC is not the best or else I'd use Grand Theft Auto 4 cause that video maker thing's awesome. But
yeah, it is.
But yeah, that interests me. And it is the same team that did Red versus Blue that's doing the more serious drama stuff.
As far as I know, now have there been, I mean, actually, I was just thinking when you were saying this new video is live action, I know listening to the commentary on the early Red vs. Blue DVDs that at least one of the guys, and I can't recall who he was, actually, was in Buffy, was like a, reoccurring character on there. So like they've got, they're in Austin, so a bunch of those guys went to UT Film School, and and they also have some guys out in LA.
Wow.
So they certainly have the, chops of making live action.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the production values on what I saw of Captain Dynamic. I mean, it's well filmed. It's great. They've got, and they have one guy that I think I've seen before, and I don't know. Maybe he is that guy from Buffy. Even though I haven't really watched Buffy, so I've seen him somewhere though. He's a familiar face.
Right.
So.
IMDb, here we come. But all right, good deal. And the next question from Marco Strider. This is also kind of City of Heroes related. The City of Heroes issue 14, the Mission Architect. It's kind of the brand new, add-on, I guess, or is it a patch or is it,
they release like what they call them missions and they're like pretty sizable and important updates that they make.
Kind of like
every
so it's sort of kind of like, in World of Warcraft, whenever they have like big, like, oh, the 3.1 patch is coming and 3.2 is going to have dual spec, you know, like,
yeah, I I'd actually, I mean, they're up to 14, but I'd equivalent, what? equate. I'd equate them to, I'd actually equate them to, like, Wrath of the Lich King. I mean, they're really sizey wow. updates usually. Yeah, adding a lot of, like, new content.
Yeah,
so.
But anyways. This, mission architect, and he also asked, kind of, as, the second part of that question, do you think this is, City of Heroes' Little Big Planet? Do you think that this is kind of they're wanting their hand in that cookie jar of user-created content yeah. to kind of build the yeah. atmosphere, you know?
Yeah. I think it is, but I think Little Big Planet is probably the wrong comparison. I would say it would be more like Company of or City of Heroes, Neverwinter Nights.
That's yeah, a, yeah that's a good yeah. point.
Yeah, I
because
I agree
from what I've seen, the tool set is nowhere near as cuddly and user-friendly as Little Big Planet, but it is extremely powerful.
Right.
Yeah, it does look like it's very powerful. And I don't know if you guys, both of you, played City of Heroes?
I have not. I own both City of Heroes and City of Villains, and unfortunately never played either. But honestly, after hearing about this, and basically what the mission architect is, for people that aren't aware of it, is, you know, I was doing some research, and it really, you know, kind of surprised me and caught me off guard, because it's a way for users in a massively multiplayer online game to create their own quest lines. And you can create your own, like, environments. Well, you can't create the environments, but basically it's kind of a drag and drop deal, to where you can kind of have a set template, and then you can pick your own versions of enemies. You can tie your own storylines to it. You can make your own quest objectives. And then you can share them through, I think, a ticket system online with other players. But then if yeah. something becomes very, very popular and a lot of people are playing it, then...
Right, the town.
Yeah, yeah, the actual, is it PlayNC that does the publishing for, okay.
Yeah, NC.
Yeah,
PlayNC.
Yeah, NC.
Something the same.
Yeah, they'll actually, give it a highlight and, actually be, I don't know if it'll be part of the full game, or if they're just gonna do kind of like the favorites list or Hall of Fame type stuff, or how they're gonna do it. But definitely very, very cool. I think that is kind of the future of the massively multiplayer yeah. space. Is, I mean, you have yeah. how many hundreds of thousands of people playing your game? How kick-ass would it be if they made the content for you? You know, if you yeah. didn't have to spend well, the money on production.
Just like
taking a good
else.
Idea from Second Life, actually, to have, you know, to provide a space for user-generated content. Obviously, you yeah. know, they're a little bit more controlling, thank goodness, than Second Life was.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, you know, just like with any, you know, other user-created content that's available for a game, it extends the lifetime of it. And I mean, and I played City Heroes for a long time. It was pretty much my one true MMO love. Yeah, and I stopped, I don't know, maybe a year and a half ago. And I played a little bit of Warhammer Age of Reckoning. Mm-hmm. For a bit, and then I kind of stopped. I just stopped them both because I kind of felt like I was just kind of done with MMOs.
Right.
Maybe it was, you know, the monthly fee that I was going to put up with because of that, you know, money crunch and whatnot.
Yeah.
But this is the one thing that's like, all right, I'm really itching to get back into it now.
It definitely sounds fascinating. And yeah, I agree. With the whole MMO thing, it feels like you're almost obligated to play because you're paying. You're paying for this, and it's kind of like, well... I already shelled out the $15. I better log in. And that's not a reason to play a game, but something like this to see the user generated content, and it's constantly going. This just adds to that appeal, in my opinion, of the MMO is always evolving, and there's always something going on, man. And you got to be logged in all the time because some crazy shit's happening. So,
it's so great because, I mean, the world that it's in, you know, the whole kind of comic book and heroes things world, it makes that ability to create things that much better, because you know you'll have people referencing you know, Marvel heroes and characters in DC universe, and kind of maybe tying off offshoots of that, you know, because you can make your own villains for the people to battle, so you can, you know, you could fucking costume up a, you know, a guy named Crimson Head, you know, and have him dual wield pistols, and you know, he'd basically be the Red Skull,
right?
But I don't know, maybe NCSAP might have something to say about that, but, you know, it's just, it kind of makes it that much more sweet that it's in that whole universe, and you know, you have people geeking out to it, so. Mm-hmm.
Well, now, with like, City of Heroes, have they done anything sort of like, I mean, I know Matrix Online did this, where they sort of provided, they had big time story events would happen, like, during the course of the game, they'd actually have guys, mm-hmm. like, playing characters, into once they transition into DC Online, it'd be great if they could actually have some sort of relation to the actual comics. So, you know, if they're doing some big 52 or, you know, crisis, that it would be reflected in the world. You'd actually have, you know, like, whatever, I don't know what the aliens, the big alien enemy in the DC universe is. Is Galactus DC?
Yes.
Have Galactus come, you know, Crisis on Infinite Servers or do something like that.
No, Galactus is Marvel, yeah.
Is he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the Skarns are Marvel, too. I'm sure there's some big alien enemy I can't think of from DC.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
City Heroes does have, you know, big huge events, you know, that kind of take place in the world. I mean, usually most of the missions you're doing are, you know, kind of instances, you know, you get to go into your own door and do there. But they do have some pretty neat events. They have like giant monsters in the in the regular kind of map worlds and stuff. So I don't know if that answers your question, but they do have, you know, they do have events like that.
Yeah, and I think it would be really amazing if they decided to start putting that stuff in the comic. I mean, how kick-ass would it be if something you made, like if we made a ridiculous Nitro Beard thing, like, oh, you're part of the Nitro Beard, and then they actually put that in the comic. You see what I'm saying?
We could make the coolest fucking villain with the biggest and most badass beard in the world.
Oh, God, yeah. It's the ZZ Top beard. Like, it all comes full circle.
I mean, It's really half the fun of a game is making your character. I had some crazy awesome characters, man.
Hey everybody, welcome back. My machine like exploded. I don't know what happened, but it was almost another disaster. But we saved it. But that was a good deal that we had going with the issue 14 of City of Heroes. I do think that we can wrap that one up. So we'll just head on to the next question.
Next question
from Marco Strider once again. It's kind of his highlight show, but he has great questions. And I think this is probably my favorite question that he asked. I mean, I'm not biased, but this is, what is everybody's thoughts on the new Batman Arkham Asylum? And, I'll have you guys kind of kick that one off because
I'm just gonna go out and say an equation, and I think that equation is Batman plus Metal Gear Solid plus Splinter Cell plus that might be the last one. I don't know any other pluses I should be thrown in there.
Love.
Yeah, it looks like it's finally gonna be a good Batman game. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love the old SNES ones. Or Genesis ones where you could like wall hop between the walls and
like
I don't know.
Like Batman Forever.
Yes. Yeah. But this looks like I don't know. I guess I haven't really followed up on any other Batman games. Or I mean I guess he was in the Marvel
Mortal Kombat versus DC.
Right, he was in that. That's about it.
But yeah, I fully agree. Whenever you said Splinter Cell, that was exactly what I was going for. Because I still think the best Batman game to ever have been made is Splinter Cell Chaos Theory. Like, I think that is that whole, I don't know, just being up on the pipes and being in the shadows and like coming down and snapping dudes' necks. And like, it just felt like you were Batman the whole time because you would just, you know, throw rocks and use deception and use all this other stuff. And the engine was just beautiful. So.
Yeah. It looks really fun. I mean, it looks like they're taking a really I love the approach that they're taking to it, which is, you know, this is Batman. He's not really a superhero. You know, he doesn't have superpowers, but he's got his wits and he's got his gadgets, and you know, and that's what he's got to use. So,
absolutely.
Well, it had me thinking this week with Butcher Bay being re-released. I'm really hoping like you said, like I love all the Splinter Cell, you know, getting your zipline gun and, you know, kind of just coming down, snapping some necks. But right. I'm just hoping they give us a good melee combat system because like that thing with Batman is like what you want to do is you want to go in and like pick off some guys, but you also want to do like the thing from, you know, like I'm thinking, you know, Batman the Animated Series where you drop down in the center of like four guys and just beat the hell out of them.
Just spin kick them.
Slowly stand up, and then just take them all on. Yeah, I don't know.
Exactly.
I saw I guess one or I think I saw a trailer and then like a little developer diary, and it looked like they had, you know, just some good old fashioned brawling in there. I don't know how the system's going to be, but hopefully they will put that in there. I think they will. I don't think they'll rely on, you know, only taking them out silently and then if you get seen, you're done.
Yeah, so. And I hope it doesn't turn into kind of like I'll be the first to say I haven't played the Watchmen beat 'em up, but I heard that it gets very video gamey. Like it's one of those like super combo and Night Owl kick the dude in the face. Like it just kind of gets in this weird sort of arcadey. You know, it completely takes you out of Watchmen's kind of a nihilistic. You know.
Yeah.
You know, just the vibe doesn't fit very well with the super 50 hit combo. Like.
Yeah.
I don't want that shit in my Batman game. But
if they were to do it for one level, just do kind of an Adam West throwback. That would be hilarious.
Brilliant.
But
brilliant.
Just keep that to like one level, yeah.
If they have, yeah, I really hope they are able to get. I mean, it'll be fine if they don't, but I would smile so much if they had, you know, Adam West voice, you know, maybe one of the thugs in the game or something. Who knows?
Oh yeah, just a little insight.
Bringing back Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill as the Joker, and I mean, like, yes. I don't know about anyone else, but I was never a big comic reader when I was a kid. But like Batman the Animated Series, that is Batman to me. Anything that disagrees with that is wrong. Like that is the essential Batman.
Absolutely, I think my favorite Batman film ever made, like everyone, you know, Dark Knight and all this other stuff. Mine is the Mask of the Phantasm. That was just such a brilliant movie.
I need to see that.
Oh, it's so good, dude. You can actually get it in a double pack at like Walmart. It comes with that and a Mr. Freeze movie.
The Sub-Zero one.
Or yeah, that's it. In the Sub-Zero one. I got that double pack. But yeah, Mask of the Phantasm, man. That's actually one of my favorite films growing up. And it actually has legitimate plot twists. Like shit I did not see coming. And that wasn't even because I was, you know, 11. It was seriously, people have watched it now. Like I showed it to some friends at college and they were impressed with it. They're like, this is probably the best Batman film ever made. And, you know, I had the Mark Hamill as the Joker. I mean, it was just so well done and it was so well paced.
I'll definitely have to pick it up. But speaking of Batman, did you guys see the, I don't know, I guess it was released pretty recently, the collection of, you know, like animators and stuff that did, you know, like six or seven different Batman stories.
Oh yeah, basically the Animatrix for Batman.
Yeah. Did you guys see that?
Yeah, I did see that.
Yes.
Yeah, I picked it up on Blu-ray on a whim. Well, not on a whim. I mean, I fucking wanted it because I love Batman. And it was pretty excellent. I quite enjoyed it.
There was one.
About half of them were really really good. Then there were a few others.
Right.
A little eh.
There were like a couple that
Bishy Bruce
to sleep.
Wayne is that's no.
Yeah, it is kind of weird. But I mean, even though like quote unquote meh quality Batman animated stuff is still 120% better than the shit they have playing on like Cartoon Network at nights now.
Yeah.
So you know, I'm down for the get down when it comes to Batman. But yeah, dude, if you're a Batman fan, Mask of the Phantasm, you will shit a brick. It's just so good.
Now, who's developing Arkham Asylum?
Who is it? Let me
That's a good
quick
question.
Google, we'll find out.
That's a very good question.
Part of me wants to say Pandemic.
Let's see. Batman Arkham Asylum.
Well, while you're looking at that, I just kind of wanted to throw out that we were kind of touching on the vibe of Arkham Asylum. And I love the fact that they made the Joker the way they did. Because it's kind of easy to fall into the Heath Ledger trap.
Since
it was so popular and people will always remember his performance and, you know, still the performance is brilliant and he, you know, deserved the Oscar that he got.
But
the Joker is more of an idea. Like the Joker is just, he has to be the yin to the yang of Batman. You know what I'm saying?
This is definitely classic Joker. And it looks like the studio that's developing it is Rocksteady Studios,
who previously have made
Urban Chaos, a game I've never heard of before, actually. It came out in May 2006, apparently.
Actually, Urban Chaos, it was one of those that if you look at the Metacritic, it's going to be like a 60. You know, it's one of those. But honest to God, the brawling in it was not bad. Not bad. So now that I heard that, like, I'm kind of confident that the actual melee combat should be pretty good.
Cool.
Should be pretty nice.
I'm
Well, on the subject of the Joker, like you were saying, I think it's good to go. The Mark Hamill Joker was a lot broader because it was, you know, it was written for animation to begin with, which I think is a good idea for games, because a lot of what made the Heath Ledger performance so good was a lot of really subtle timing, just tiny, you know, it was little ticks he had in his face that made it, you know, made it kind of funny and yet also really scary, which I really don't think, maybe Rockstar or Valve could pull it off, but
it's,
I think,
very true.
It's a better idea to go for the broader, you know, more like insane, crazy Mark Hamill Joker.
That's a very good
point. You have a much better chance of pulling that off, you know, believably, and, you know, doing it well, doing it justice.
Right, and, That's kind of, it was funny because Siskel and Ebert, whenever they were reviewing Mask of the Phantasm, they pointed that out and they said animation is kind of the best way to see Batman, because you can do certain things with a camera that are completely unrealistic. You can get certain shots and there's a certain film noir kind of atmosphere that you can get. But yeah, in that same regard with the Joker, he can be as flamboyant as possible because he's not tied to the given rule set that the human body has, if that makes sense. Like, the skeleton can be more exaggerated, and his arms could be kind of lanky, and, you know, he can kind of be kind of like, I'm kind of picturing from Cowboy Bebop, Ed, you know, where it's all, like, wavy arms and, like, just, like, batshit crazy. But I think if they go along the more exaggerated style, I think it'll work really well, because that's what makes him so creepy, is especially even in the comics, you know, just like you, Peter, I kind of got into comics a little bit late. I didn't read them growing up, but I've noticed that the Joker is bonkers. Like, in the films and stuff, you know, he honestly reminded me more of, like, Jim Carrey's The Riddler. Like, he's that kind of crazy. He's like just wacky. But then he also has that sick, demented side where you're like, okay, this guy has a problem. But yeah, I mean, I can't wait to see how they pull it off. But from all the pictures and stuff like that, you know, with him in the straitjacket and the only thing that kind of worries me, though, is the Joker looks great and Batman looks phenomenal and the environments are beautiful. But then the thugs, they have 3 thug models, or at least that's what we've seen so far. It's all the same exact guy that you beat
up. And they look exactly like the guys from the club. I don't know if you played that, the Bizarre Creations kind of score attack shooter. Like, I thought it might have been made by Bizarre Creations, just because they're the clown thug from Arkham Asylum and the clown dude from the club look exactly the same.
That's a good point.
I just watched the trailer and it looks like the brawling should be pretty sweet. I just rewatched it again because they've got, like, the regular fighting, but then also, you know, throws and, you know, fucking pile drives that you can do. Okay, maybe not pile drives, but, you know, like taekwondo stuff.
Right.
And then, so you look at the character list. They've got Harley Quinn. That's excellent.
Nice.
Bane could be cool if they're still doing that sort of suave South American gangster thing with them. Poison Ivy, Croc, Lycor. Scarecrow, Riddler, Freeze. A couple guys I've never heard of. They're probably just guys from the comics. Oh, and then the Penguin, too.
Huh.
That's quite a lineup. I mean, that's the classics. But I mean, yeah, and I wonder, because they haven't shown a lot of stuff on anyone really besides the Joker, have they? I mean, to be completely honest, I haven't kept up with, like, previews and stuff.
They haven't.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
they've been pretty close to the vest with this. They've done a good job of showing just they haven't put out too much on there.
Yeah.
Which is good. I'm kind of glad that that's the way, because it kind of builds that whole Batman mystique. It builds the, okay, what's really this, you know, what is this product really going to be about?
Yeah.
And it kind of builds that atmosphere. But
So as far as my answer to the question, what are my thoughts on the new Batman Arkham Asylum, I'm not going to pussy out and go with the, well, I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm going to go with and say, yeah, I'm pretty fucking psyched for it.
Yeah. Same here. I'm pumped. I mean, for all intents and purposes, they got it right. Just from looking at, because all of Batman is the feel. You have to get the feel of Batman. If you don't, it's ridiculous and you end up with Batman Forever. You know, with the George Clooney bat nipples and, you know, it just gets kind of weird. But
just because I've been playing so much goddamn Spelunky lately, I think the approach of approaching a Batman game like a roguelike would work well. Oh, just because he doesn't have superpowers,
that's a good point.
First time.
Right.
Oh, well, here, I just want to, before we get totally off the subject of Batman, I just want to bring up all the Batman games in between Batman Returns and today that no one remembers. Yeah. Okay, so you had we'll skip the obvious Genesis ones. Here we go. All right. Batman and Robin in 98. Batman Beyond, Return of the Joker in 2000.
Do you have the systems for these?
Those are PS1, right?
Yeah, that sounds PS1. Yep. Now, here's an interesting one. Gotham City Racer, 2001.
I remember that.
PlayStation game. Ubisoft. Oh, that was Ubisoft before they were. That was when Ubisoft was bad. Let's see. Batman Vengeance in 2001. That was a PS2 game. Dark Tomorrow in 2003.
What?
Never heard of that one.
Oh,
Rise of Sun Tzu in 2003. I do recall, I remember hearing about this one.
Yeah. I think I remember hearing about that one in the same name, in the same sentence as, like, Drake and the 99 Dragons. Remember that shit?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
So I was about to ask, is that the kind of, like, comic-y and more animated one?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yes, yeah, Rise of Sun Tzu was definitely Batman the Animated Series based. Then there was a Batman Begins game, which pretty much I don't call anyone talking about that. And then obviously Lego Batman, which was
it had the
unfortunate problem of coming. It was the most recent Lego game after people started getting tired of them, I think.
Right, and I will give you segue of the year. Petrie, because our next question comes from Doug Oldham, or Hex Zero on boards, and from No Quarter Fame. But his question is a pretty robust one, and I think we can kind of really sink our teeth into this one. Why does the LEGO franchise feel that the proper solution for combating the loss in sales to kids playing more and more video games is charging like $800 for their big multi-thousand piece sets? I'm aware that they have many popular gaming titles, but that direction clearly wasn't in their original mission statement. And that's kind of a good point. I mean, we're getting in the age of, you know, digital technology, the video games, stuff like that. And is there a place for Legos anymore?
Are they really charging like that much? Like,
they're charging premiums. I don't have like the actual prices and stuff like that, but I know that the prices have gone up. And I don't know if that's whether with production or the fact that since there's not much of a demand, they do have to charge more to reimburse the cost or, you know, what's going on there. But no, that's Lego. I don't want to say it's on its way out, but I mean, since I've outgrown it, I'm kind of out of the loop. But it does feel like Lego's not getting as much like TV advertisements unless it's for something like Lego Indiana Jones.
They're definitely not getting enough love, you know, the usual amount of love.
Mm-hmm.
I think a big problem was they went too hard at licensed Lego kits, because for a while there they started pulling back from that, but for a while there you could find nothing but Star Wars Legos, Indiana Jones, Harry Potter Legos. They didn't have any of the regular kits. Now I know that Legos have always been an expensive toy, because, you know, I know when I was a kid, you know, I'd get like one Lego a year for, you know, birthday and Christmas, and you know, it was never the monorail, which I wanted, because God forbid that thing cost like $300. But like, and I know like my mom, she packed all my Legos away, has them up in our attic. And she calls them heirloom toys, because she wants them to give me to give them to my kids, because you know the Legos don't go bad, they're still good.
Oh yeah.
I think, I mean, it feels like they're trying to do some good stuff, because the Mindstorms are really, those are great, and they're kind of pricey, but there's some really cool stuff done with Mindstorms. I can't say I haven't bought Legos in years. Actually, I did. The last time I bought Legos was about 4 or 5 years ago. They had a special Technic of the Mars rovers that was just the coolest
thing.
Because it would actually fold up like the real Mars rover, like all fold up into a tiny little thing. Like there was when it was inside the capsule, and you could unfold the whole thing, all the solar panels and the wheels and that. And I bought that and put it together and have it on my shelf just because I thought that was so awesome.
Hell yeah.
But I haven't, you know, looked at the prices lately. But hopefully as they come away from the licensed stuff, you know, I feel like Legos, you know, even if kids like video games, they're still, you know, hopefully, you know, today's kids, all of them don't have video games and TVs in their rooms.
Well,
so, you know, if you're not allowed to play video games on the family TV, you know, you can go play with your Legos.
Right.
You know, that's what I was about to say. And I know my wife, the Mrs., says this, you know, a bunch just from interacting with kids in her job and just from observing stuff that, I don't know. It just seems like kids are kind of fed their imagination nowadays. I don't know. It's, you know, something that I've thought about, you know, just the the number of just kind of sedentary kids sitting around playing video games, you know, kids that have cell phones and stuff. And, you know, so I think a lot of kids do just kind of sit around and watch TV and, you know, play video games now, as opposed to, you know, yeah. back in the day when I was like, all right, I get my 1 hour of, you know, video gaming a week. And you know,
right. Yeah. And something I kind of want to bring up is this may be a generational gap. And I fully agree with what you said about, you know, kids are kind of hand fed their imagination and they're kind of sold this product. I mean, we live in the most marketing driven society on earth, you know, but I'm thinking, you know, since we're all, you know, of a certain generational bracket, have you seen the patterns of with something like Little Big Planet or like making mods like, you know, I know this is about, God, a decade ago, but like Counter-Strike, stuff like that. Do you think that our mentality of growing up on stuff like Legos is actually, we're taking that and using it on this new digital medium? We're like, okay, let's, like Gary's Mod is a perfect example. Like, okay, let's build some shit. Like, let's get this together. Let's get these Legos that are part of my computer and build this entire imaginative world that I could have made with Legos, you know, back when I was, you know, 6, 7.
Yeah.
But now, you know, you kind of have all this processing power and like basically one toy to host all your Legos. And your computer is your toy box, you know?
That's a really good point. I mean, we grew up in the age of Legos, and then we also kind of grew up in the golden age of mods for video games.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some kind of correlation. I mean, you could probably draw it.
Well, what we may have is these kids now are skipping the whole action figure Lego phase and going straight to making mods. If you ever listen to the What They Play podcast, which is it's the guy, the British dude John, who left one up, started it. It's all, you know, it's basically, it's not a review site. It's a site that gives parents information about, you know, just what's in games, a little bit, you know, more extensive than what you see in ESRB.
Yeah,
it's a podcast. And was talking about the Cartoon Network that they have on their site, this incredibly popular thing. It's like the Ben 10 Creation Kit or something it's called. Basically, it's a Little Big Planet flash game. It's got, you know, how many different parts, and you can make how many different games in Flash on their site, and they've got something like a couple 100,000 user-made games already on there, just in this little Flash Creation Kit.
Yeah.
That's impressive. Like, honest to God, after we get done with this, I'm probably going to go check that out because I'm such a nerd for making stuff. I mean, you know, with the Machinima, I love it.
I was about to say that right after hearing that, I think I'm going to go play The Incredible Machine. And it kind of saddens me that, I don't know, I don't think kids these days will play that now.
Yeah. Back in our day, you know.
It's kind of unfortunate that there's just so... Like the popular kind of casual games like Peggle. I mean, I love Peggle and Bejeweled and all that, but there's not any real thinking involved in those.
Right.
I mean, there's the tiniest bit, but you mostly, like, I always play those while I listen to podcasts because you can sit there and just, you don't have to use your mind at all.
Zone out. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's so passive. And it's like, I want the crab because he has the little flippers on the side. Like, yeah, exactly. Like, I know exactly what you mean. But yeah, it is so passive. But I don't know. I mean, I always hated when I was young, people on like radio and stuff doing broad generalizations, like all these kids are just going to be working at McDonald's. And I was like, screw you, man. I'm going to make something of myself. You know, like I always
had off the lawn.
Exactly. Like I hate to make
paint my poodle pink.
I hate to make the whole broad generalization, but, I mean, the way I have to look at it is, okay, Halo 3 is still very popular online. But is it popular because of, you know, like cussing and the clan wars and stuff like that, like going on with your clan and shooting people? Or is it popular because of Forge? Like, which part are people playing? I mean, they have both sides of the spectrum in this one product, and Forge is just kind of forgotten about. Like, I haven't heard too many, like, you know, user-created mods being made, except for on places like Penny Arcade or NeoGAF, but that's the most hardcore fan base you're ever going to have. But the casual people, they're not, they don't care about it. I mean, in all honesty.
I think the problem is there just wasn't a, and I hope that Little Big Planet provides an impetus to other developers to follow this, that a lot of these games, they have great user-created content, but there's no way to push it to the casual user. You right. have to be a hardcore guy who reads forums and gets links and knows about these cool mods
and knows how to install them by putting them in folders and not just clicking in EXE.
Exactly.
Exactly. Because there were tons of awesome zombie mods for Half-Life and Counter-Strike, before Left 4 Dead came out, and nobody played them. Their servers were, it was like three or four servers running it at the, high time. And then Left 4 Dead comes out, and granted, it's, a professional game that is better made and has, better mechanics than a lot of those mods.
Right.
But it's blowed up. It's huge.
Speaking of zombie mods, just real quick, I remember for a while... myself and a couple of the platformers were playing Killing Floor, which was a really well done zombie mod for UT2K4. That was up till then, that was probably the best first person shooter zombie game that you could up till Left 4 Dead.
Mm-hmm.
The Killing Floor was probably the best, and it was a mod. So
yeah, absolutely. And then I mean, what evolved from the zombie mods is the Legend of Narpig. So, I mean, it all came, I think we got it for the better. I think we evolved. So, yeah,
I concur.
Okay, now
I have hope for Narpig.
that ends the gaming-centric questions.
All right.
We'd like to thank Doug and Marco Strider, absolutely, for the awesome questions. Thank you, guys. And now we get to the two questions that are, oh no.
Let's do it.
Okay, yeah, it wouldn't be Nitro Beard without Ridiculous. So this first one, should I do Justin's or should I do Cambots?
Let's do Justin's first.
Okay. Justin, Mr. Justin Echtehade, another one of the No Quarter people from way back in the day that I go way back with, but now he's actually an editor at Brewology.com for the homebrew scene. So he's actually making the big bucks doing that. But he actually writes in with a question... why does President Barack Obama sound so white on television?
Oh boy. I'm going to say it's observer bias, because if Barack Obama spoke with a real, heavy, Ebonics influence type style speak,
right,
you would never hear of him because he would never have gotten onto the national stage.
That's true.
They never would have put him on the DNC. He never would have gotten anywhere near the presidency.
Pander to the people.
That's why he talks white, because that's the only way that he ever would have got elected. If you look at some of the old stuff, specifically the back in during the South Carolina primary when he did the if you've seen the GIF with the brush his shoulders off.
Yep.
Yeah.
Where it was quote easy. Sometimes if he gets in front of a crowd that is predominantly African American, you'll see him start slipping into the African American preacher rhythm.
Right.
He'll
start
doing the call and response with the audience. You'll see him sort of slip into that. But yeah, I mean, I think it's just one of those things where. Any president who gets elected is gonna sound pretty damn white.
He still throws in the occasional fist bump and what's up, homie.
Yeah, he brings it. I mean, I won't lie, he brings it, and that's why I elected him. I mean, and the coolest thing about it is during his presentations he's a very good speaker, and that just goes across all races. I mean, if you're a good speaker, you're a good speaker. But the coolest thing, and Justin and I were actually watching the inauguration that whole day. We were watching the whole event live, and then during the big parade that was like 12 hours long, I mean, for one thing, I felt so bad for him because him and his family were just standing there waving at people seriously for like 4.5 hours. They were in that one spot.
Pitch black there by the end.
Oh, yeah. And what was awesome about it is they had the drum line. They had that marching band solo. I can't remember what college it was from, but it was the coolest thing. Like people doing backflips and like cartwheels. And I was like, hell yes. Like, this has arrived, and I want this to be broadcast worldwide so they know what America's up to. Because this is what it's about right here. But yeah, this is one of those questions that I want to kind of duck. You know what I mean? Like, you want to answer it passively, kind of a... Well,
who was I? Oh, that was the... Okay, have you heard of the Wii game Major Minor's March? It's by the Parappa guy?
No, I have not.
Well, it looks kind of like Parappa. It's very colorful, cartoony. It's a little bit odd. It's basically a marching band game. And apparently, it's by the guy who did Parappa. And what you're doing is you're the conductor and you're marching through the streets. And as you hit the beats, the people on the street will join in with you. So by the end, you've got this huge marching band. And it was hilarious because I was reading an interview with the developer, and he got the idea because he watched Drumline, the Nick Cannon vehicle. Which
amazing.
Is yeah.
Awesome. Oh, it's, okay. It's like in the same vein as if the bad good movies like Bring It On or You Got Served. It's that kind of movie. It's bad, but it's also great.
Right. But if the director of You Got Served said, man, I used to play Busta Groove and that shit was awesome. You know, like if flip full circle like that. Oh, man. But thank you, Justin, for that completely controversial question.
It's because it's my white.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that is absolutely true. And his dad is a... Oh, man.
Kenyan,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay. But his mom was white, so that answers the question.
There you go. It's all about how he was raised.
There was a really interesting article. This was way back, like at the right after the election, that they had pictures of Barack Obama with his grandfather. Mm-hmm. And, man, you see, he looks exactly like his grandfather. His, you know, pure lily white, you know, grandfather from Kansas. I mean, he looks exactly like him. The family resemblance is so
really?
It's a little weird, yeah. Because wow. You see him, you're like, wow. Especially the ears, man. You know where he got his ears from,
right? I can preach to that because I have giant ears. I can fly away on my ears. Like I get good radio reception and everything. So, but all right. Thank you, Justin, for that question. I'm gonna have a talking to him after this. But where I just posted up some pictures of the Barackan grandparents, and yeah, wow, that is true. Okay,
yeah.
Going to the final question from one Mr. Cambot, who's I've been an acquaintance with Cambot for quite some time from the old Penny Arcade days. Like God, I've probably known his style of humor for 5 years now. Like in all honesty, like back in the day.
I would like to add that he posts up some wicked reviews of music in the music thread on the platforms. He has some pretty good suggestions of stuff that you normally wouldn't find out about.
He's smart man.
Yeah.
Smart man. And his amazing question to end off this first segment in grand style from Cambot. How many 10-year-olds do you think you could take in a fight?
Well, this is going to differ.
Yeah,
we got to give rundowns of our physical size and
right.
What kind of shape we're in.
See,
I'm gonna let you go first, Wes.
Oh, okay. I am 5'11" and about 155 pounds. So not the biggest, not the biggest block of wood, but I do have about 11 years of martial arts training. And I am a third-degree black belt in Tong Sudo Mudokwon, which is a Korean martial art. A lot. And whenever I say Tong Sudo, a lot of people are like, what the hell is that? That sounds fancy. Think of it.
Sounds like a delicious noodle dish.
Yes. think of Taekwondo with a few less kicks and more like grappling. So like whenever you see people do spin kicks and like doing their crazy fight sparring and the Korean team in the Olympics and things like that. It's a lot like that. Like, but the best practitioner, the most famous practitioner of Tong Sudo is Chuck Norris. So, in the Walker, Texas Ranger, when he's, hook kicking people and like punching them in the face, he's doing Tong Sudo. And I can't remember.
I just have to do a quick shout out and another full circle to my friend Sam, who's been doing Tong Sudo for a really long time as well, like 16 or 17 years.
Good man.
And he is probably the biggest Batman fan I know. So once again, full circle.
It's a small world. But I would say that. So, but I think the real question is, do the 10-year-olds have weapons? Like, you know what I'm saying? Because it's a different fight. If you're at a playground and like Billy comes and he wants his lunch money because you didn't give him chocolate milk and he brings like four of his friends, I could probably handle it. But
I was worried about that. I mean, they're going to be different environments.
Yeah, and then
to take into account.
If it turns into West Side Story and they start bringing out blades, you got to cut a number in half. You know what I'm saying? Because I mean, normally 10-year-olds, depending on size, and I'd say 17, 18, maybe, because it's all about endurance, right? I mean,
yeah.
Do you go after all of them all at once? or do you kind of like pick them off one at a time? Do you go after, okay, that kid has asthma. I'm gonna save him for last. I'm just gonna push him to the side, and then while he's running back, he'll be short of breath, so I won't have to worry about him. Like, you have to think of it kind of like tactically. You know what I'm saying? So it really
depends too. How much training do the kids have? I mean, do they know to go for crotch punches?
Well,
if you got 17 kids all trying to crotch punch,
then that's
gonna be difficult.
You're in trouble. You're in trouble. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you guys, yeah. Go ahead, because I'm trying to think, like,
yeah.
Whenever you say 10-year-olds, I'm trying to even think of, like, how big a 10-year-old would be. Like, how big can they get?
Kids these days are pretty big.
Because I see those, like, CNN deals with the fat kids from McDonald's, where they're, like, where they're seriously 10 years old and about 785 pounds.
Yeah.
So I'd take two of them, maybe.
Yeah, my mother teaches kindergarten now, and she definitely has some beefy little kids in that class.
Right, right.
Sausage kids. Well, let's see. I don't know. Okay, yeah. I'm also about 5'11", and I'm like 175 pounds. I don't know. I'm in pretty good shape. I mean, I go to the local CrossFit gym, and I do my workouts, and I do parkour. So I could definitely evade them. I mean, I'd have absolutely no problem. I might kind of take the roundabout attack method, just kind of, do some parkour, get up on a high cliff, maybe bring a kid up there with me, and then just kind of toss him off. And then
like Highlander. That sounds like, Highlander, dude. That's awesome.
and then just kind of, hop down, maybe land on another 10-year-old, hop up somewhere else and take out another one. Just kind of, slowly pick them off left and right. I think I can power through some as well, but I think if you had – six to eight 10-year-olds on me at once, I might be done. They might
right.
be able to hold me down.
Right.
But I think I could go through and pick off, I'd say a good 20 to 30.
Yeah.
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 Let's see. I'm 6'4", about 225. And I don't have any – the only sort of like one-on-one, sort of fight training I have is I wrestled in high school. But I don't think that, grappling one-on-one with these kids on the ground is really going to be the effective the method. So I also – I played rugby for the last couple of years.
That'll
so
come,
what I'm
yeah.
thinking is I'm just going to, pull a juggernaut tactic and just keep the knees up and just kind of, just run, just run wind sprints back and forth through the pack and just kind of keep the, keep the sharp elbows. And just, try to kind of bowl them over is what I would say.
That's a good idea.
No, that's a great idea.
Make sure you go for the nose, because, a kid hitting the nose, they're done. They're crying, they're sobbing.
Yeah. And especially, with the nose and also the shin, because that's at the time that they're about to hit their growth spurt, right? So, exactly. Like, I know I get pissed when I hit my shin. It could just be – I could just barely hit it on, like, a chair, and then I'll just stand there and be like, motherfucker! Like, I get just so mad, right? Because it has So, but now – oh, crap. Now I said that. Now the first thing they're going to go for. They're just going to kick me in the shin.
Now they know. Now they know.
Oh, shit. Oh, no. I don't know what to do now.
So let's see. I think the three of us together, though, in like a, let's see, 10-year-olds, what grade are 10-year-olds in? Like middle school or?
No. 10-year-old is like fourth or fifth grade, I want to say.
That sounds about right.
So like elementary. So the three of us, I think, in like a typical American elementary school, just kind of standing in the middle of the hallways, and they start coming after us. Mm-hmm. I think, we'd pull some Left 4 Dead tactics, like kind of barrel up in a classroom.
Start do a Shiva.
Start throwing those little like, iron chairs at them with the sharp feet and desks and stuff. And,
yeah, those one-piece desks, right, that had the little tray at the bottom where you, like, set your book in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Oh, yeah.
And there's those.
We could take on entire class of 10-year-olds, of, fourth and fifth graders.
I think so. And see, and that's also the age range of Narpig. So you know what I'm saying? That comes with, wow.
Well, I'm thinking if we could get Squiz out on the playground, he could really take the parkour to the next level. We got to do, the ultimate tactic would be to sit Squiz in the center of the merry-go-round. we're going for assumption's sake that they have an old, dangerous playground, rusty merry-go-round on concrete. And then once they swarm that, me and Wes come running out, and we just spin the hell out of that merry-go-round, and kids just go flying. It's like just an explosion of little 10-year-olds.
Clotheslining 10-year-olds left and right on the way out.
Then also...
see, now I really want a game that's like... and I only play this on my friend's 360, a game that's like Dead Rising, but with 10-year-olds instead of zombies.
Absolutely. And see, I also thought, like, the playground, perfect, you know, because there is a lot of the sharp objects. But then also... You know, you remember the old school book fairs that you had, you go into the little library and then the little fold out, like it's a tray that holds like four shelves of books, right?
Yeah.
And then
yeah, it folds open in half. Like.
Exactly. And then you also have like posters of race cars and like those pencil erasers and all that shit. Like you have all these little items. So what I was thinking is maybe, you know, Petrie, you barrel through them. Like if they're if they're waiting in line to pay for their Goosebumps book, you sprint across the room and you have shelves everywhere, man. So you pin them. Like you can pin them. Brian,
and maybe start throwing down shelves left and right.
And then Brian, what you do is it's just literally a hop, skip, and a jump. You're on top of the stuff, right? So you're up above the reach of their little arms, and then I would come in like those old Jackie Chan movies where you would use the environment, like where he would like flip off of a table and then, yeah, I could see this working.
I think if you and Petrie picked up a table like together and just held it up and just rammed at him, or maybe if you each took one of those chairs and just kind of, you know, using stationary warfare, just like took all their pencils and pens and just like wrapped one to the end of each leg of the chair.
Right.
Like, I mean, you got a sharp object right there. Just charge at.
And those old rubber pencils, the ones that would bend, like you could get those and then you could like, you know, start doing stuff that way. We've spent like 15 minutes talking about how we're going to beat up 10-year-olds.
It's a very very deep subject.
It is a very elaborate. I think that was, I mean, you know, not going to say the best for last, but you know, I think we saved the best for last.
Well, on the martial arts subject, just before we finish up, I just wanted to give a brief review. I watched Ong Bak 2 this week.
Oh, I need to see that.
If anyone has seen Ong Bak 1, or it's the Muay Thai, I can't think of the guy's name.
Tony
right
Jaa.
Tony Jaa, it's a Tony Jaa vehicle where, you know, it's just him throwing elbows and knees, just guys left and right, and doing insane stunts, which then they would replay from like five different angles, which made it so much cooler. Ong Bak 2 is not as good as Ong Bak 1. Partly because they don't do – there's very little stunt work that isn't fighting. It's very fighting-oriented, and it is also very, very serious. Like, his sidekick from Ong Bak 1 shows up for about 2 minutes as a drunken, retarded dude.
Right.
Which is just a little bit uncomfortable for Americans. It's that very broad Asian humor that doesn't translate very well.
Right.
But there's a lot of cool – basically, it's kind of like Samurai Jack. He joins up with these pirates in Thailand who have guys from all over, you know, the world. They've got
Somali
a samurai.
Pirates.
They've got this dude from Africa. They've got guys from the Middle East, and he learns all their different martial arts from all these different guys. And then he proceeds to fight his way through the movie. And in particular, there's this one great there's this giant black dude who's just ripped beyond belief. Who basically does this kind of crazy Greco-Roman wrestling, boxing, sort of mixed martial arts style
right?
That is just fantastic to watch. And they have a great fight
on that.
Well, that's really what it is. I mean, it's action porn. I mean,
It's and on that same regard, have you guys heard about the movie Chocolate?
I was about to, because you mentioned retarded, and I immediately thought of Chocolate.
No, you can't say, no.
He's autistic, not retarded. Right,
and I know, my wife would kill me because she's a counselor, and
Oh, man. That movie is not as, I'm not going to say it's not as violent, because it's crazy violent, but there's not as many just brunt fight scenes, like those things where a dude gets kicked in the head and then the foot travels his face all the way down to the concrete. Like, it's not as overly like, oh my god, he just killed that man, you know, where but that chick is bad, dude. She
I mean, she's basically Tony Jaa's female equivalent.
Absolutely. But she has beautiful kicks. And the thing is, she's cross-trained. She knows Muay Thai, but she also knows Taekwondo. So she has that flexibility of a Taekwondo person where she can kick literally straight up and down. Like, she can literally do standing up splits, basically, to where she can kick someone right above her. So, I mean, some of that stuff, oh my God, like, and then it shows, of course, the bloopers at the end. And I say bloopers.
Oh, God.
And these aren't really bloopers. These are more like faces of death. Like, these are more like they fall like 3 or 4 stories onto like gravel. You're like, oh my God. And then they get up 6 minutes later with a bandage on their eye and continue the fight scene. Ridiculous.
Well, it's like, you know, the end of Jackie Chan movies in the credits. You know, they roll some of the injuries and, you know, he'll get taken away on a fucking stretcher.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, that was one thing about Ang Bak 2 is it's almost, it's like a Halo 2 caliber level, the ending. It's a, what do you want to call it, hanging ending?
Oh, the cliffhanger.
Cliffhanger, yes. It completely, you know, there's the resolution of one tiny storyline, but, like, he's been captured, and it's totally obvious that they're setting it up for the sequel. And I just kind of hope for the sequel they do a little bit more just the basic stunt work. It's like my favorite part from Tom Yong Gong, which was the second Tony Jaa, the one with where he has to go find his lost elephant. Aside from the one shot, you know, him going up the center of that spiral building that lasted for like five minutes, that was incredible. Yeah. But the other part was when he runs up the plate glass window and does a backflip off it.
Yes.
The same instant that an ATV crashes through it. I mean, that was just incredible.
And people, if people don't know, like, where to find that film, in America it's called The Protector. And go watch that shit, because that was awesome. And there was a little thing that kind of surprised me in that, is whenever he was doing pull-ups on the elephant tusk.
Yeah.
Like, just a little thing, I was like, that's kind of cool. Like, that's...
He definitely has a thing for elephants, because he has a fight in Ang Bak 2 where he does a flip kick off an elephant, and he fights someone on top of an elephant.
What?!
Yeah, dude likes his elephants.
Oh,
yeah.
Dude loves his elephants.
That's cultural, though, I think. But but now I want to see it. All right. Well, awesome. That wrapped up the first segment of violence and debauchery and politics and Batman.
10-year-olds.
Yeah, I think it was a good segment. You know what I'm saying? I think it's a classic, if you would say. And with that being said. We actually, not only did we get questions from one Mr. Marco Strider, but he had a song request that we're actually going to do right now. And what you're about to hear is a song by Tenacious D called Classico.
Can't you see he's the man? Let me hear you applaud. He is more than a man. He's a shiny golden god. If you think it's time to fucking rock and fucking roll out of control, well then you know you've got to rock the block. You fucking sock my fucking cock, cause when you rule, you fucking school all of the fools out of their jewels. Cause if you think it's time to,
if you think it's time to,
if you think it's time to fucking rock, he is going to kick your fucking ass. And you know his name is Kyle Gass. Rocking and fucking rolling and fucking rocking and fucking rolling and fucking
Welcome back from the break, everybody. Hope you got refreshments and...
Little Gable.
There's your Jack Black right there. second segment, we're coming into it now, and this is kind of a catch-up for Brian and I from last week, because this was our second segment last week before the internet exploded.
Yeah.
And so there's a few things we need to talk about, but I'm glad we got a Peter here. So we can actually talk about what we've been playing the past week or two. But who would like to go first?
I'm going to nominate Petrie.
Yeah, guest of honor. That's true.
All right. Well, I've been a Super Turtle gamer for the past little while.
The
first game I've been playing is Grand Theft Auto 4. Got the PC version, and I've been playing through that. And I have to say that with the latest patch that dropped in March, I'm not having any problems. It's running great for me. Obviously, I can't dial it all the way up, but I've had no problems with it.
It runs, smooth as butter for me as well.
Yeah.
And quick question about that, because as we saw earlier in this very episode, my computer is horrible. And it was freezing, but what I'm thinking is I kind of have a budget of about $700 I want to spend on a PC. And, like, I do know my way around it, but I will tell you that right now I have a single core with DDR1 memory and a 7900 GS graphics card. So, you know what I'm saying? I cannot run it. Like, I bought the Grand Theft Auto pack on Steam, and I just tried it for shits and giggles. I was like, I want to see how badly this runs. And it runs badly. Like, it's enough so that buildings won't show up. Like, I can see the character models, but there's no buildings. So, but if I try to drive a car, it'll hit a building, but it'll hit nothing. Like, I'll just see through the world and all this other stuff. But do you guys think that if I went and I got myself a very good dual core, or, you know, maybe an entry-level quad core with about 6 gigs of memory and maybe like a 8800 or something like that?
Yeah, you...
Well, yeah, I built my PC last July, and I'll tell you what I've got. I've got a E8400. It's like a 3 gigahertz dual core. Mm-hmm. I've got a 4850. The ATI card,
right.
And then I got 4 gigs of RAM, and it's run. This is the first game I've run. Well, Crysis obviously, but aside from Crysis, this is the first game I've run that I haven't been able to max out completely.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've been playing Mass Effect, COD4, all those games, and the thing I really like is actually I'm thinking the way this generation is going. Is I'm hoping it lasts longer, because what it actually means is that since we're getting a lot of pretty good console to PC ports. That's one thing that's been nice, mm-hmm. is that yes, we're getting less specific PC games, but the quality of the console to PC ports has definitely gone up this generation compared to previous generations. And hopefully, if we stick with these consoles for a while, that means this video card I have in my system now will be able to run top-of-the-line AAA games 3 or 4 years from now, because we'll still be, you know, they'll still be building them for PS3 and 360.
Yeah, I never thought about that. That's a very good point.
Yeah, with what you mentioned you were thinking about buying, you'll be fine, because I've got, I think, this is a little worse than Petri as far as some things go. I've got a E6600 dual-core 2.4 gigahertz, 4 gigs of RAM, and then an 8800 GTX, mm-hmm. which is, I think, the, like, 640 megabytes of video RAM.
Right.
So, and I run it. I mean, it's smooth as hell, so you'll be set.
Okay. But yeah, continue, Petri, because I want to hear kind of what the different – I'll admit I've only played maybe 3 or 4 hours of the campaign of Grand Theft Auto 4. I have it for 360, but how is the PC version? I mean, as opposed to like the hardware side of it, like, is it, I heard that it kind of, a few of my friends told me it kind of controls bizarrely.
Well, according to everyone who I've, yes, the driving, they've implemented a realistic, and I'm making giant air quotes here, a realistic driving model, which really means your back end will swing out at the slightest touch.
Ugh.
Which, it's good for one thing, if you like doing, like, cool tricks, like spinning a complete 360 and then continuing in a straight line, you can do that really easily, but just driving around the city making turns is extremely frustrating, unless you, when you make turns, you have to slow down to... grandma's
speed. It's a drastic change from previous Grand Theft Auto games. I don't know. I mean, it just takes some getting used to. But there are some times where it takes me off a little. But what are you gonna
it's
do?
Generally, the good thing is, because they've implemented the way the mini map works and such. When you're chasing people for missions, it really isn't a problem. They've taken into account the way the driving model works for races. Yeah. I never really liked racing in Grand Theft Auto anyways, right. because it's never been a very good driving game. But yeah, with the new driving model, I don't even bother with the races. That's probably one of my biggest complaints, is it just I don't really see the need for a realistic driving model. It's GTA realism per se has never been its big forte. I mean, obviously the world and such, you like it to be look good, but you know, the actual mechanics of the game, you know, have never been particularly real. But I'm finding myself kind of in the middle ground. When GTA 4 first came out, it was praised as like the godfather of gaming, you know, the new Citizen Kane, the greatest game ever, that, you know, gaming nirvana. And then a couple months later, I would say, this fall or so, like a big backlash started online.
Oh, yeah.
that people, you know, really turned against it. And I would say that yes, it didn't deserve the praise it got, but it is a really good game.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it is definitely, you know, definitely a 9 and above, I would say.
And I've mentioned this in previous podcasts. It's just another example of the internet hate machine. Yep, I mean, absolutely. they'll latch onto something and just fucking bury it into the ground. You know, and of course, I don't know, I never really judge my opinions. I really just kind of find out for myself when people are like, oh, this guy posted a screenshot of Nico with no head and it's just his teeth, which is a hilarious screenshot, by the way. But then they're like, oh, well, that just must mean the PC version is shit. Don't get it. You know?
Yeah.
Internet.
Well, that's like, you know, that's why I avoided for so long. And then I talked to Squiz, and Squiz was like, yeah, it runs fine on my system. So I looked at some reviews, and you know, and it was pretty bad when it launched, but they've dropped some patches, and it runs just fine now. What I find is it really is they've done a really good job of improving on some of the really niggling little problems that previous GTAs had. Like, for instance, every successful mission, and often a lot of other successful actions, things you do like taking your friends out or even doing stunt jump, it auto-saved afterwards, which is so nice because there was nothing worse than, you know, having to, you know, forgetting to save after a big mission or having to drive all the way back to your safe house to save. This is so convenient.
Yeah.
And the other nice thing, too, is when you die or go to the hospital, you don't lose your weapons.
Ooh.
So, which is a little, it's broken in a sense because I have like 2,000 rounds of AK ammo. I just and I'm throwing grenades everywhere and mowing people down. And I just did a fantastic homage to Heat mission, which is really, really well done.
Oh, man. You need to do the video editor for that, dude. You need to use video. That's
Have you messed with it? I mean, I don't know if you'd even be interested in it, but the way it's set up is really nice because you used to have to fraps it, which, you know, I'm going to do it perfect, and then, you fraps like 500 megabytes of video and you mess it up.
Oh, yeah.
But with this, all you have to do is turn it on, and all you do is hit F2, and it will record the last like 30 or 45 or, you know, seconds or a minute. So it's like, all right, I did it. Now I record it. So it's really nice.
It's really cool.
Yeah, and then the combat is different. I don't know, better or worse. I find that as long as you're in cover, you basically can't be damaged. So it kind of becomes a little slow at times, but you know, combat was never that great, so it's not, you know, it's possibly an improvement or a sidestep. It's all right. It's perfectly serviceable.
Yeah.
Well, I really enjoy the characterization, though.
Yeah.
The way the characters are written and the actual like emoting they do with the faces, the animation. I mean, like characters like Brucey is just so well constructed. Like, I know a guy like Brucey in real life.
Right.
It's like perfect. You know, I can identify with him, you know, immediately. And it's just a lot, I'd say they're less broad. You know, they're still definitely stereotypes and such, but they're not as broadly written. They're a little bit, you know, more human than they have been in previous GTAs,
right,
which probably is, you know, partially a function of the the better graphics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I heard some of the characters like later down the line, and you don't have to worry about spoilers because I have no idea. But I hear some of it gets pretty heartbreaking. Like, you meet some people that really, it can kind of hit close to home depending on like people you may know or stuff like that. Like, it can get pretty heavy at times, but then they always counter it with that classic, you know, rock star humor that they have.
Yeah. Then as far as some little niggles I have with the game are, there's one function with your PDA that what you can do is you go to the main map and you can set a waypoint.
Mm-hmm.
Or often with missions, they auto-set waypoints. What it does is it actually gives you a little line on your mini-map to show you where to turn.
Yeah, it's like a time.
And if you've got a car with a GPS system, which is basically any of the expensive cars you steal, it actually has a voice that tells you, like, you know, turn right 200 yards. The problem I have with that is I've become so dependent on it that I don't know the city at all.
Right, right.
Which is also a function of how large the city is. But really, like, if you said, go here, I could find it eventually, but I would really be, you know, I would be all over the place. I don't know it as well as I did. I've talked to Squiz earlier previously about this.
By the way.
Brian. Previously about this, Vice City was the last GTA game I really got into, and I got into it precisely because it was a very small, contained area. So by the time I was done with GTA Vice City, I knew that city.
Yeah.
I could just drive anywhere. And I feel like I don't know it that well in GTA 4 yet. And granted, I'm only about a third of the way in. But, like, I just don't feel like there's – I feel like it's so vast and there's so much stuff. And I'm always either just taking taxis automatically to get to places or following this line that I don't really know the city.
Yeah, that's your
– Real quick. Speaking of taking taxis, it took me the longest time to realize that the prompt said hold E or, you know, hold getting car
to get in the car. Actually get in the back
so
seat.
So I just kept stealing all these guys' fucking taxis. And I was like, I just want to be taken somewhere. I didn't mean to steal it. And then I was like, oh, hold the button. And yeah, so.
I like getting drunk just to hear a Deco go, yellow car!
I just.
Or just go, aah!
I love.
To summon a taxi when he's
I
drunk.
Love the hate, like the hazy stuff and how you're bumbling and fumbling around. Like, I just. Yeah, oh, my God. It just that little touch.
Ragdoll physics can make the worst game better.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah.
And then. The only other kind of complaint I had was just that I haven't found a good radio station yet. You know, I like previous GTAs, I found like two or three radio stations that I was like, yeah, we're cruising with this. Like especially with San Andreas, they had the alt rock, the modern rock station, and then yeah. You had your you had your early '90s rap station, and I would always just listen to those as I was driving around town. I haven't found a good one. Liberty City Rock is all right. And the hardcore station has some moments, and obviously the talk station is great. They've got a Rush Limbaugh impersonator who is hilarious. Yeah. But I haven't found one that I really like to stick to.
It's really funny. I listen to Vladivostok Radio, like the
Einstein Klein, something.
But I find that I kind of, maybe I immerse myself too much, but I change the radio station depending on who I'm driving. So if I'm going around for a ride with like a, with little
Jacob,
what's his name? Little Jacob, you know, I'll turn on, you know, like the Bumbaclot Radio Man. And, you know, if I'm picking up Brucey, I'll turn to, you know, fucking Liberty City Rock. And if I'm, you know, if I'm picking up like my girlfriend, I'll change it to, what is it like Electro Chocolate or something?
Yeah. Or like.
Yeah,
or like broker radio or whatever it is. And normally it's funny because I kind of agree that, you know, especially with like, man, Vice City had a hell of a soundtrack. I mean, anytime you listen to like crazy death metal and stuff like that, you know, just doing crazy stunts and stuff, I loved it. But yeah, with GTA 4, it was more, I guess I would call the music more modern, if that makes sense. Like more kind of a, everything sounded sort of independent. I mean, it was. I know it had licensed tracks and it had some really big names, you know, because I mean, you have people like Busta Rhymes and stuff on there. But it just felt like B-sides almost. It felt like the stuff that wasn't really famous, and I can definitely respect it because there's a lot of great stuff on there. But then that means I started looking at types of music that I never really listened to before. Like I always listened to the broker radio, which is kind of like some ambient chill out electro stuff, and like I'm kind of into that genre, but. I guess it's more poppy in Grand Theft Auto 4, but yeah, I listen to that all the time, like enough so that I got the soundtrack.
Yeah, because you're right. It's funny because when you do hear, it's not very often you hear a big name, but they're good songs. Like I'll be just cruising around, I'll sit in the car, and all of a sudden 1979 by the Smashing Pumpkins will be on. I'll be like, all right, or Bright Lights by Kanye or something. But most of the time it's stuff you haven't heard before, but it's good stuff.
Yeah.
They've always had a knack for that. Always. Like, if there's any soundtrack in any Rockstar game, I know I'll at least love one song on there that I've never heard before. And that's something I can always look forward to.
The only thing I miss is I wish, because the Irish family plays, seems like a pretty big part. Like I said, I'm only about a third to 40% through the game. But, like, there's a big Irish family, and you do a lot of missions with them. I wish there was, like, an Irish punk station. Like, I want some Mad Caddies.
Get some Flogging Molly and...
Yeah, some Flogging Molly on there. So when I'm going on my missions, I could just be busting out to that.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, I found that game very impressive. So I'm still working my way through that. The other two games I've been playing is firstly I've been working my way through Free Space 2 Free Space Open, all the mods put on it, which just makes the game look gorgeous.
I just bought that. I literally bought that not but 15 minutes before we started recording because it's part
from good old
games. Yep, they're having their good old games. Everyone go to GOG.com, G-O-G.com. They're having their spring sale, and I don't know when it ends or has it already ended. Like, I know they had a huge sale. You could get Free Space, the first Free Space expansion, and then Free Space 2, all for like $9. Freaking yeah, amazing deal.
I mean, it's fantastic. Because outside of, and I'm still partial to, I think, TIE Fighter as the best flight sim, you know, best space flight sim that I remember ever playing. I love that game. But Free Space 2 is up there easily, you know, on level, and in some cases better than any of the old school LucasArts space sims. I mean, it's just really excellently done. The missions are really cleverly designed. They do a good job of mixing it up so it's not just, it's not always jump in, blow up this many ships, protect these ships. There's a lot of, things will change and you'll get a lot of mid-mission. You got to go do something else. You have to do a lot of interesting stuff. And it controls great. It's got, you've got all your basic, space sim things, balancing your shields, transferring energy.
Right.
I love that it has swarm missiles because I think swarm missiles are the best effect ever and more games need to have them.
Yeah.
And it's just a great game. I've played through the game before. This is the first time though that I've done it using Free Space Open, and it's surprisingly easy. They actually have it in, if you Google Free Space Open, they have a wiki, and on the wiki they have a program that it's just a Java applet that will automatically download all the files and everything to your Free Space install folder, and pretty much does it all for you. You have to go in and select which ones you want to go ahead and apply to the game. But other than that, it's pretty hands-free. It's really easy to get up and running. And it just, like I said, it looks, everything's normal mapped to death and, runs fantastic.
It does look gorgeous. And it's funny because, and Brian, I know you're going to be bored to tears in about 5 seconds because I'm going to take this on a sci-fi tangent. But I'm just now getting into more sci-fi stuff. Like, I was a huge Battlestar Galactic fan, and that just finished airing. And, I'm kind of... that was kind of my gateway drug. I mean, I was always sort of into it because every kid grew up with Star Wars. But now that I'm getting older, I'm starting to kind of find out, okay, my tastes are starting to refine a little bit. And I'm really edging towards sci-fi for a lot of stuff. But what I ended up purchasing on a games front, of course, a Free Space, not about an hour or two ago. But I actually got... the X series. Like, I have X2 and X3. Like, have you played any of those? Or, like, X...
Let me make sure. X is the one that it's a bit like Freelancer. It's a space combat, but also, like, a space economy.
You got it.
There's, like, economy elements as well.
The best way to look at it is kind of like a single-player EVE Online. If that makes sense,
that's pretty apt description.
Yeah, it's I just started playing that, and man, like, I have not. It's X2, and this was made back, I think, in like 2000, 2001. So it's an old game, and it looks old. I mean, but I have not been more immersed in a game in so freaking long, and I don't know what it is, but there's only something about sci-fi that will get me completely locked down into a world. Like, the same thing happened with Deus Ex years ago. That I was just so a part of that, man. I read every freaking book. I went up and I was like, oh man, the security code to get into the Hong Kong Triad place is the same year that, Hong Kong was independent. And like, I just got so into every little nook and cranny of it. But with the sci-fi stuff, with Free Space, is it more, because with the X series, it's very, not difficult to control, but it's very intimidating. Like, you have your pitch and your yaw, you have your thrusters, you have your accelerators, you have all these different things, and depending on the class of ship that you have, all of the controls change. Like,
no, this is Free Space is very much everything you fly is either a fighter or a bomber, and they all control about the same. There are a lot of little controls you can do. There's lots of targeting controls that if you want to get into, you can target. You can target anything. You can auto-target enemies, components, objective ships, all this stuff. But really, the critical controls are pretty basic. They've got some really nice stuff built in there, like an auto-speed function. So if you target a fighter in front of you, you'll automatically match its speed so that you can... So if you're trying to dogfight with it, obviously you want to use your speed in closing, But once you get in real close, you know, it can be a pain in the butt if you're constantly, you know, flying past it.
Right.
So that's real nice. And then they also have an auto target function where it'll automatically target, like, the next closest fighter. So if you're blowing up fighters, it'll automatically target who next is closest you can go off and take care of them.
Oh, yeah.
So it is a space sim fighter, so it does have a learning curve. It definitely doesn't hold your hand. It's not like Hawks. You're going to have to put some right. time in to learn it, but it's not Falcon 4.0.
Right.
On the subject, though, of Battlestar Galactica, there is a Battlestar Galactica mod
yeah.
for Free Space 2 called Beyond the Red Line.
Yeah.
That is difficult.
Really?
Because that has a function where, you know, in Battlestar, how they will, you know, they don't exactly follow it, but they'll take into account the fact that in space, you can, you know, you don't have to be, you can, like, turn and still go in the same direction.
Oh, the momentum and the, yeah.
Right, they take into account the momentum. And so, obviously, you know, doing that in, taking the momentum all into account all the time and doing it for real is impossibly hard. If you've ever played Orbiter, which is a space sim, trying to dock the shuttle in the space station is impossible. Because you'll end up tumbling, like, in three, four different axes and flying straight past the space station or crashing into it. It is impossible to stabilize yourself. You have to go so slowly and so delicate.
Now I just want to see, like, a sitcom that has to deal with, like, a kid getting his driver's license in space where he's like, oh, shit, and, like, his ship keeps flipping around. He's like, I don't know what to, like, he just can't do anything. But, yeah, like, that's, but part of me is like, oh, my God, that sounds so hard. But then there's, like, 99% of me that's like, I'm going to download that shit and play it nonstop. Like, I'm going to learn that. I'm going to learn the in and outs of it. Because, yeah, that's kind of the reason I bought Free Space. I mean, I've always heard it's a classic, and I've always kind of wanted to play it just to see what it's about. But then I saw the trailer for the Battlestar mod, and I was like, oh, shit. And then I hit the purchase button. I was like, yep, purchase. And now I'm $10 in the hole. So,
but what they do kind of with the Battlestar mod to make it manageable is that they essentially have, I would call it a momentum button that normally, you know, you'll be, it does take you a while to slow down after you turn off your engines and that, but to actually do the cool things like side strafing basically, mm-hmm. or, you know, doing the thing where you're going one direction, you flip around, shoot a Raptor after, you know, shoot a Viper.
Or a Raider.
A Raider, yes. Jesus, but the show's been off for 2 weeks, and I'm already forgetting everything. You shoot a Raider off your tail and then spin around. So what you can do is you hold down shift, and that essentially engages momentum mode. So you say you're flying at a base star. Mm-hmm. You can fly towards it, then hold down shift, turn sideways. So you're essentially side strafing and firing at it the whole way across.
Oh, shit.
And then let go and go back to normal, you know, sort of flight sim control.
Oh, man.
And which is... It sounds really cool, and it is, but it's hard to get used to, but it's a really well-made game. Still in beta, has been in beta for a long time. They do have updates, though, so they're still working on it. So hopefully it comes out, you know, sooner than Black Mesa Source does. But
right.
It is an excellent mod there.
Oh, man. I can't wait. I cannot wait.
And then the final game I've been playing that I just started playing, basically, like, you just downloaded Free Space 2. I just downloaded Braid about 3 or 4 hours ago. Mm-hmm. And I'm right now in the fourth world. And it's really clever. Like, the puzzles that I've done so far, they're all very logical, very clever. You know, they take some lateral thinking, mm-hmm. but they all pretty much make sense.
Right.
It is overtly annoyingly pretentious at times.
Yeah.
See, I was going to ask you before when you mentioned that, but I was waiting for you to bring it out now, so I have to know why.
Well, the good thing is it doesn't really interrupt the gameplay. But okay, you know how have you guys played World of Goo?
I have not, unfortunately.
You know how it has like kind of sign painter and it's got, you know, got like these clever little sayings. Well, World of Goo, they've got like this story you read as you go into the levels. And it's just this really, it's kind of, it feels like somebody watched Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and said, I'm going to make a game of that, and it's going to be deep. And that's what this story is kind of like. Now, I hear apparently it gets really awesome at the ending. Like I said, I'm only about 4 levels in, and the gameplay is impeccable. And really, you can kind of ignore that stuff. The game, it doesn't intrude on the gameplay. The levels themselves are very, you know, it's just you and these puzzles you're solving. But what I'm thinking is that the guys making the guys who made Psychonauts, what's their name? Double Fine. Double Fine needs to hire Jonathan Blow, put a gag on him, sit him in the back, and just make him a puzzle designer.
That's a good idea.
The guy does fantastic puzzles, but just don't let him go out there and talk. And,
don't let him talk.
But it's a very good game. It's just I can see why. I think that the people that there was the blowback was had a lot to do with like Jonathan Blow, all his stuff before the game came out, and some of the you know really kind of annoying stuff in the game. But from what I've played right now so far, it's really cleverly designed. It's very simple. The controls are basically jump, move, and then rewind time. And then there seems to be a fast-forward function, which I haven't really come to a point where I can use yet, but it makes me look really cool. The world gets all glowy, and I have a trail behind me. But it's all based on functions of that, and it's you really have to basically sit there and observe some of this stuff and kind of go all the way to the end of the level and then come back. It's sort of based – it's basically you have these worlds that have like 10 stages in them, got a lot of references to Mario. You've got basically Goombas – and the flowers coming out of pipes, and at the end, a little thing that looks like a cross between T-Rex and Domo Kun comes out to tell you that the princess is in another castle.
Classic.
But awesome. I'm really enjoying that so far. But like I said, I'm only about three levels in, so I've still got, I think, looks like I've got 4 more levels to go. Hard to say. There might be, like I said, supposedly the ending is supposed to be really awesome, and that might be kind of hidden right now.
Levels or worlds?
It's basically you go into a world, kind of like World of Goo, how you've got sort of themed areas.
And then
inside that there's like 8 different levels. That's kind of how this is.
Cool.
There's a level that are separated by doors, and then there's about like 10 levels in each world that are kind of themed to a certain thing.
In regards to the to like the story that Jonathan Blow is trying to tell and everything, I actually do agree with you that parts of it are completely unnecessarily highbrow for no reason. Like he kind of goes into a self referential kind of like, you can tell this game was about something else whenever he was making it. But I honestly think that the game completely would have benefited without those little books telling you a story at the beginning. And you'll see why as you go.
You would have skipped that. You think it would have been better if they had just gone, told the story through the game itself?
Absolutely. It's especially later on. I'm not going to give anything away, but whenever you find out kind of what is really going on, you'll realize that the main story of the game is the game. Like, that's what's highbrow about it, is he understands how to tell a proper story through the medium. And that's using the interaction. There's a lot of like symbolism behind what you're really doing and like what the game stands for and stuff like that. But then whenever you start reading the books, he almost like shoves it in your face a little bit, like, or at least the attitude that he's trying to get. He kind of makes you feel a certain way. And that always annoys me, like with any movie and stuff like that.
He doesn't trust his own game to get through to you. He wants to bang you in the head and say, look, see, do you understand this?
Exactly. And that's kind of the same reason, and this is kind of going to go kind of off topic, but that's the same reason why I dislike a lot of Braid is why I dislike a lot of the movie Crash. Because they beat you.
Crash, the Oscar winner?
Yeah. 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 Okay. Yeah. The best film winner, which, oh. It was the same year as Munich, man. It was the same year as Munich and fucking Crash 1. Okay, never mind. He doesn't trust the people playing his game. I mean, he wants to make a game that really speaks out to people and really shows what the medium is capable of, but he doesn't trust people to understand it, then why make it? You know what I'm saying? Like, what are you doing? Yeah.
Well, I think games suffer from that more so maybe than even other forms of media, because you've got directors, movies and books, they have this long established history of ways to tell a story. Mm-hmm. And games really there hasn't been the games that actually tell the story through the gameplay, let's say that started I mean, it started before Half-Life. That was the first FPS. Let's say, I'm gonna get creamed on this no matter what I say, because I'm sure there's an example before that. But let's go back all the way to the beginning. Game's been around for like 30 years now. So we haven't had that much time to build up the language. So they're so afraid that they're not getting it through the gameplay that they're like, okay, we're going to fall back and, you know, either use these long-written books in some cases or cutscenes because we don't trust our own game. We don't trust our skill with the gaming medium that we can properly tell our story. So we're going to fall back to these other methods that we know how they work. We know the language to express certain ideas in film and
Absolutely.
Literature.
And kind of Warren Spector, the man who created Deus Ex and the Thief series and some of the classics in the games as storytelling, you know, using the interaction. He said it best that since we are very young as an industry, everyone's trying to battle in making the camera. Like, everyone comes out with a new engine and, oh, the Unreal tech, and you can make all your games with this. But no, this one's better, and using the Doom engine. And then when you know, Crytek is going to change the world. And once we figure out, hey, it's not about what engine we use. You know, hey, it's not about what camera we use. It's about the story we tell inside of it. Like, Braid's kind of going on that kind of wavelength, which I highly respect. But yeah, at least give credit to your audience, man. I mean, don't pander to us. Don't, you know, well, I'm pretty sure you guys would get it, but just in case, like, I just can't stand the double backing. Like, almost he doesn't trust
the It's like Soulja Boy hated Braid, and he was going to hate Braid no matter what. Putting those books in was not, you know, no matter what, Soulja Boy and people like Soulja Boy were not going to like Braid. So why pander to them with those
exactly.
books?
Exactly. Yeah, you got it. Yeah, it's a great game, but yeah, there are some issues with it. And unfortunately, the issues are outside of the game, more so with, like, the controversies and stuff like that. But
right.
But yeah, good times.
But I do look forward to finishing it, because obviously the puzzles are quite well made.
Yeah, absolutely. Good times. Yeah. Mr. Brian, what have you been playing?
Cool. I can't remember what I said from the segment that we lost.
You actually said GTA 4 was one of them.
Yeah, I'm still playing GTA 4, just like Petri. I'm, you know, turtle gaming my way through it, getting distracted playing other things. I'm playing that. I'm playing GTA Chinatown Wars on the DS, which is really fun. I think this is mostly what I said in the last podcast, but basically it's exactly what you might imagine. It's you know, what Rockstar has learned from doing all these 3D GTAs and, you know, San Andreas, even GTA 4, combined with, you know, the whole top-down, old-school feel of the first GTAs, which I absolutely loved. So
Here's the most important question, Squiz. Can I run over a line of Hare Krishnas, and does the game yell Goranga?
I have not experienced that yet, unfortunately. I'm in the same boat as you. I do miss the Guranga. So, but
that was the most memorable part of the old GTAs.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah. So I've been playing those. Not much else. The one thing that has really been sucking up my time at home and at work, I have been playing. I literally cannot stop playing Spelunky, which for those of you that don't know, it's in a little free indie game made by Derek Yu, who was the guy behind Aquaria, if any of you remember that. And it's I'll just kind of use his words to describe it. It's kind of a platformer mixed with a roguelike. His exact words are, it's like La Mulana mixed with NetHack. But basically, you're this little miner. It's a lot very reminiscent of Apogee's old Crystal Caves, in that you're a little miner running through. And basically, you see how far you can go. As far as I know, there is like an end. You can't actually beat it, but the game is very unforgiving. And if you die, there's no save. You know that there's no extra life. If you die, that's it. You got to start over from the beginning.
Man.
And I think that's exactly what makes it so addictive, is that, you know, each one of these times you play, you get so attached to that character and you don't want to see him go.
And you probably get better. You know, the more you play it, you get further and you're like, man, I know I can get further this time.
Yeah, you get better. But, I'm on, let's see, if I combine my stats from work and home, I'm probably on like my 100 or 120th play, and I still haven't gotten past like the second area, and I think there are five.
Jeez. That sounds like La Mulana then.
But it's so much fun. I mean, each time is different. All the levels are procedurally generated, so every time you play is different. The whole environments are destructible. You have bombs, so you can take different approaches. And they're just in general a lot of ways that the different elements of the game can interact differently every single time. Yeah, it's excellent. If you haven't played it, it's definitely one of the best indie games ever made. You know, just kind of freeware indie games. You owe it to yourself.
And
to
it
play
is
this.
It is yeah. free.
Okay. It is totally free, absolutely free. And the name again is Spelunky. So that's pretty much been taking up most of my time. Yeah, that's about it. What about you,
Good
Wes?
Deal. Mainly, I have been learning the ropes on Dawn of War 2. And I talked about this a little last time, and I was kind of mumbling and fumbling last week, but this week, since I played a little bit more, I kind of know exactly where I'm headed with my thoughts on it. I do think that Dawn of War 2, if you ever wanted to get into real-time strategies, like in any type of those games, I think Dawn of War 2 is a great place to start. And a lot of people, if you go on message boards and stuff, people will yell at you completely otherwise. They will say, do not start with Dawn of War 2. It's not traditional enough. You don't base build like you would in like an Age of Empires or something similar like that. But the reason I think Dawn of War 2 is a great gateway drug into the real-time strategy realm is you have a hero unit, which is kind of your main unit. You can name him whatever you want. He kind of has that traditional Diablo appeal to him. Because he is your character. That is your character that you can outfit, that you can actually pick up loot. Whenever you go through campaign mode, there's actually epic bosses that you can fight that drop loot, much like a World of Warcraft or a Diablo, Titan Quest, any kind of action RPG. But they've taken away, Relic Studios has taken away base building. So you don't have to worry about cutting down trees. You don't have to worry about, oh, I need to get all this oil to be able to run my tanks like you would in a Company of Heroes, which is also great. I mean, that's kind of the polar opposite. But Dawn of War is very easy to get into. The lore is a lot of fun to get into because it's, Space Marines versus aliens versus orcs that have a Scottish accent and they're soccer hooligans. And so it doesn't really take itself seriously. So it makes it kind of a joy to play because you're never really stressed out. And also, instead of, I know if a lot of people see things like StarCraft and they see replays of it and those like professional Korean gamers playing it, those guys are nuts, right? I mean, they have like 300 actions a minute and they're like hitting all these buttons and they're like programmers. You don't have to be nearly that good to enjoy yourself in Dawn of War 2 because, everything's just so streamlined. I mean, you only have to deal with maybe 10 people on screen at a time on your faction. So, and they're all broken up into squads. So say, oh, yeah, sure, I'll send my sniper squad, have them hide in the bushes for an ambush. And then I'll have my heavy gunner squad kind of set up their turret right here. So if they come, so if the enemy comes down a certain bridge, I can flank them that way and, just protect your bases. And then take your hero who has a big-ass warhammer and he's like, running, and then he electrocutes people, and it's like you're a fucking Jedi in the Warhammer. You know what I'm saying? Like, you just feel like a badass. So
that's what Relics RTSs are really good about, expressing physicality
yep.
of the games. Like, it started with Company Heroes when you would call that an artillery strike.
Oh my
like,
god,
that shit looked like it did damage.
Oh yeah.
I mean, because guys, you'd see Nazis flying everywhere and buildings coming down, and it's even more so in Company Heroes because, like you said, yeah, you'll get your heavy weapons guys covering, and then you spec out your hero, and he will just run in there with a chainsword and just be, you just see him just sending guys flying everywhere, and there's blood spraying,
vicious,
and it's just it gives you the visceral feel of combat where something like the old even newer games like. Command and Conquer Red Alert.
Yeah.
Which is a great game in its own right, but you don't have any, when you blow up the tanks, you don't feel any impact. Where with the Relic games, you really feel like you are
hurting shit. You're fucking shit up. Yeah, I mean, with Command and Conquer, you just have George Takei yelling at you. And then, with, 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 But yeah, with especially with Company of Heroes, man, like someone asked, okay, they wanted to get into real-time strategy, and I would recommend Company of Heroes as well. And on that same regard, Tales of Valor just came out, the third expansion for Company of Heroes. And
that is the tank where you are in charge of one tank or something, I was hearing?
Sort of. It's basically a multiplayer add-on. I mean, they do have some campaign stuff, but the campaign is not nearly as good from what I understand. I unfortunately haven't got to play it yet, but hopefully within the next week, before next show, I'll be able to kind of sink my teeth into Tales of Valor. But from what I've read, it seems like they kind of missed the mark. And I mean, Company of Heroes and Opposing Fronts are two incredible games. Like, these games are classics. These games, you know, if you go to like gamereplays.org, there's huge communities dedicated to like dissecting this game left and right. It's like the sequel to chess, because you have to worry about things more than, okay, well, this unit is the rock, paper, scissors of this unit. So if I build four of these, it'll counter five of those. It's more of like whenever we talked about the visceral feel of like an airstrike, let's say, okay, these guys are hiding out in a building. Well, I could flank the building, or I could get my tank and blow the fuck up out of that building. Like, I could put a hole in that wall so they don't have cover anymore. You know, there's a whole different mentality of strategy. Like, oh, great, a sniper's in the watchtower? I'll just throw a grenade at the base of the tower and watch that shit crash down to the floor.
Right.
So there's always something going on. But with Tales of Valor, it seems like they kind of took a step back. And it is more of the rock, paper, scissors, multiplayer balance, skirmish map type mentality. So, I mean, if you're into that side of things, it would probably be recommended. But I'm more of kind of the campaign and kind of feeling that, you know, yeah, man, I'm the Billy Badass of this universe. And I went in and I just completely took out 45, you know, orcs in the case of Warhammer. Or like, you know, I took out the Panzer Elite Squad in the case of Company of Heroes. But Dawn of War 2 has been taken up a majority of my time. And I think a game that I'm going to start, because I just got it for dirt cheap at Blockbuster. They were basically giving this thing away. I got it for $7 for my PlayStation 3. So now I'll have a reason to hook this back up, is Condemned 2. And
oh, nice.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that, because I've heard some great things about it, like especially with like the detecting in the environment. You have to find out a certain room that someone was in, so you have to look at like phone numbers, and you know, like, you just have to be a detective, which is pretty cool. Yeah. But yeah,
I'm looking forward to it. And you get to beat up devil possessed hobos.
See, that's a plus. That is absolutely a plus.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe Condemned 2 was also the one where you fist fight a bear.
Yes. Yes, it was. He busts through a wall. Like, I watched a YouTube video of that, and I couldn't stop laughing. Because they really build it up, and, like, it gets tense for a minute. And you're like, what the fuck is that? And, you know, you're walking in, like, a really dim room, and then there's, like, light flickers on and off. And it builds that whole atmosphere of, you just know something's going to be right in front of your face the next time that light comes on. You just know that you're in this pitch black room, and you hear a growl. And you're like, where the fuck is this? And then you turn around, and I think it like busts out of an elevator or something. And I'm like, it's a grizzly bear. Like, what is a grizzly bear doing in the middle of the city? Like, what are you doing? And then, oh, it just looks hilarious. It looks great in like a quality product. But yeah, a fucking bear? Like, really? Am I going to fist fight a bear? That's awesome. So I'm looking forward to it. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I played the demo for Condemned 2, and it was pretty fun. I'll have to... I mean, now that you mentioned that, I probably find it super cheap, but, you know, I just have to actually make time to play it.
Right, exactly. That's the
kicker. Yeah.
Oh, man.
All right.
I think we're about done, gentlemen. This has been a good cast. This has been a lot of fun. Got a lot of reader mail. We're gonna have to collect some more reader mail in the future.
Yeah, man. I can't wait
and do this once again, but. Peter, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's my pleasure, guys.
And yeah, that wraps it up for our holiday extravaganza, Easter Bunny edition of Nitro Beard. You guys take care.
Later, guys.
Later.